United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. British Labour Party leader Keir Starmer sounded like a winner Friday after an exit poll pointed to a landslide win for his party in the British election.
Because tonight people here and around the country have spoken and they're ready for change, to end the politics of performance, a return to politics as public service. The change begins right here because this is your democracy, your community and your future. You have voted. It is now time for us to deliver. Thank you very much.
The historic defeat for Conservatives will likely spark a contest to replace Prime Minister Rishi Sunak as leader. U.S. President Joe Biden went on the radio Thursday vowing to keep running after a disastrous debate performance raised questions about his readiness. We get more from the AP's Jennifer King.
In a radio interview with Andrea Lawful Sanders for The Source on Philadelphia's independently black-owned WURD radio, Biden says the stakes extend beyond his own political prospects.
This is the most important election because the next president of the United States, by the way, is going to be able to appoint at least two more justices in a four-year period. Maybe more. Imagine what that does to the Supreme Court.
There's a growing sense that Biden may have just days to make a persuasive case that he's fit for office before Democratic support for him evaporates completely.
Proud of the record, and we just got to keep moving.
The president will campaign in Wisconsin on Friday and sit for an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos that will air as a primetime special Friday evening. Jennifer King, Washington.
After hours of heavy rains, winds that left a path of destruction in Jamaica, Hurricane Beryl is headed toward Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, the National Hurricane Center said late Thursday. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Lebanon's Hezbollah launched a major rocket and drone attack on Israel on Thursday and threatened to hit new targets in retaliation for the killing of a top commander a day earlier in the south of the country. The latest surge of violence and the steadily worsening border conflict. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder has more.
Sparked by Gaza, the conflict between Iran-backed Hezbollah and Israel has raised fears of a full-scale war, which both sides have indicated they want to avoid, and diplomatic efforts, led by the United States, are working to prevent. Mohammed Nasser was one of the most senior Hezbollah commanders Israel has killed during the conflict. Senior Hezbollah official Hisham Safieddine, speaking at a memorial for him, said the group would widen its targets after his killing.
Reuters Lucy Fielder reporting. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports on a lengthy prison sentence for a U.S. citizen in Russia.
A Russian-born U.S. citizen received a 12-and-a-half-year prison sentence for drug trafficking. A lawyer representing Robert Woodland in Moscow says Woodland has been sentenced to more than a dozen years in prison for attempting to traffic large amounts of illegal drugs. The lawyer says Woodland has mental health issues and that an appeal of the prison sentence is planned. The State Department says it is aware of the case. According to Russian media, Woodland's information matches that of a man now 33 years old who told an interviewer he had gone to Russia to find his birth mother because he had been adopted by an American couple in the mid-1990s. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Brazilian police indicted former President Jair Bolsonaro for money laundering and criminal association in connection with undeclared diamonds the far-right leader received from Saudi Arabia during his time in office, according to a source with knowledge of the accusations. A second source confirmed the indictment, although not for which specific crimes were committed, allegedly. Once Brazil's Supreme Court receives the indictment, the country's prosecutor general will analyze the document and decide whether to file charges and force Bolsonaro to stand trial. The former president has denied any wrongdoing. And nearly 90 migrants bound for Europe died when their boat capsized this week off the coast of Mauritania. The state news agency and local officials said Thursday. Dozens more remain missing. The Coast Guard rescued 9 people, including a 5-year-old girl, according to the report. The Atlantic route has grown in popularity because of the increased vigilance in the Mediterranean. For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Today is Friday, July 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Namibian lawmakers introduced a bill to counter a same-sex marriage ruling by the Supreme Court.
The country's Minister of Home Affairs, Albert Kawana, introduced a revised marriage bill in Parliament. The legislation seeks to annul a Supreme Court ruling in May last year that recognized same-sex unions.
And an alliance of Western countries set sights on minerals needed for a global shift on green energy.
W. Fernandez, the U.S. government's representative to the Minerals Security Partnership, said a Chinese mining company, CMOC, was using predatory pricing to keep the cost of cobalt extracted from the Democratic Republic of Congo down.
Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Namibian lawmakers introduced a bill to counter a same-sex marriage ruling by Namibia's Supreme Court, pushing back on gains made by the LGBTQ plus community. Vitaly Angula has more from Vindec.
In what has become a bit of a cat-and-mouse game between traditionalists and the more liberal members of Namibian society, the country's Minister of Home Affairs, Albert Kawana, introduced a revised marriage bill in Parliament. The legislation seeks to annul a Supreme Court ruling in May last year that recognized same-sex unions by Namibian couples concluded abroad. Kawana told Parliament the bill is needed to remedy oversights in what defines a spouse in a marital union.
Spouse means a person, whether male or female, who is married to a person of the opposite sex, and includes a person who is a party to a foreign marriage. Opposite sex means the male sex in relation to the female sex. That's A. B, female sex in relation to the male sex. Sex being is determinatively assigned for purpose of birth registration, and the opposite sexes has a corresponding meaning.
Kawana says the premise of the bill is that same-sex marriage is not in line with Namibian culture and legal principles. He further says Namibia is a Christian country with Christian values, and that is why marriage can only be between a man and a woman, but human rights lawyer Uno Kachopuka disagrees.
The Republic of Namibia is a secular state. That means we have separation between state and church. This means that the legislature cannot rely on or import religious views and values into the legislative process, because that would amount to imposing one group's or even individual's religious beliefs onto the general public. And this in and of itself would violate our constitution. Basically, you cannot impose your religious views on me. That's why we have freedom of religion, right?
Carla Schrickeling is the legal representative of the couple who scored a Supreme Court ruling in May last year that recognized their marriage concluded abroad. She says she is sure that her law firm will challenge the new marriage bill, which she says will fail the test on whether certain parts of the proposed law unfairly discriminates against sexual minorities.
It's a check and balance system, and that's what the courts are there for. The courts are there to ensure that the legislation that's passed by Parliament actually protects the entire Namibian community and not parts and parcels of it. And what was again found in the Supreme Court case, and the reason behind this check and balance system, is that minorities of the people that the minorities get discriminated against, and the courts must sometimes step in to protect the minorities against the majorities, because otherwise, if there wasn't that system, the majority would always be in a situation where they are going to discriminate against minorities.
The marriage bill was tabled in Parliament to counter a Supreme Court ruling in May last year in which the country's highest court ruled that same-sex marriages undertaken abroad are recognized in Namibia. This ruling drew opposition from certain sectors of society, most specifically religious institutions and lawmakers who moved to change the law that made the ruling possible. I'm Vitalio Angula, reporting for VOA News from Windhoek, Namibia.
Kenya's anti-government protesters are rethinking their strategy. This after demonstrations on Tuesday were marred by violence and looting that they fear could undermine the movement and its effort to push President William Ruto to resign. Alice Rizzo of Reuters has more.
An uneasy calm hung over the Kenyan capital on Thursday. Armed police officers patrolling the streets of Nairobi as residents and businesses braced for potential fresh unrest. Demonstrations on Tuesday were marred by violence and looting. Now, activists behind the country's anti-government protests are rethinking their strategy. They fear the clashes could undermine their movement and its efforts to push President William Ruto to resign. Foy Wambui, a young actress who had come to the protest in downtown Nairobi on Tuesday, said she was heading home because of the chaos.
Over time, what has happened is so that the peaceful protesters are deterred from coming to town, and we are deterred from actually coming and practicing our civic duty.
Some activists say the violence was the work of goons hired by politicians to either discredit legitimate demonstrators or advance their own agendas.
We have seen now there's an increase of goons who are now being paid to come and just disrupt whatever we are trying to do. And it's very unfortunate, to be honest, because whatever we are doing right now, it's not just for the young people. It's not about the millennials or Gen Z. It's for everyone.
Some called on social media for demonstrators to take a step back and said the next planned demonstration on Thursday should not go ahead. Njoki Wamae is a Nairobi-based political scientist.
It's no longer the movement that started. It's morphed to something else. But I think many young people are still on this. There are still many genuine Gen Zs, millennials on the street protesting. So I think this was maybe a strategy to end the protests, because once people are, criminals are created, you know, created, because clearly, once the criminals are created, the next thing is police will use even more high-handed techniques to get rid of them, probably even shoot protesters who are innocent as they fight the criminals. And then from there, it's branded, these are criminal elements, and so the protests end.
Kenya's government spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment. In official statements, the government has generally distinguished between peaceful protesters and those they brand as criminals that have hijacked the demonstrations. But their allies have seized on the violence to try and discredit the movement. The initial protests last month against proposed tax hikes were overwhelmingly peaceful, although the police fired tear gas and water cannon. The protests became violent as some people briefly stormed Parliament last week and the police opened fire, killing dozens. The next day, Ruto withdrew the tax increases, but protesters vowed to carry on, issuing a range of demands from anti-corruption measures to Ruto's resignation.
That's Alice Rizzo of Reuters. And the U.S. government's representative to the Mineral Security Partnership, an alliance of mostly Western countries that aim to speed the development of energy mineral supply chains, said last month that the Chinese company was using, quote, predatory, unquote, tactics to hold down the price of cobalt mined in the DRC. Henry Wickens looks at what this means for Africa.
Last month, Jose W. Fernandez, the U.S. government's representative to the Mineral Security Partnership, or MSP, an alliance of mostly Western countries set up in 2022, said a Chinese mining company, CMOC, was using predatory pricing to keep the cost of cobalt extracted from the Democratic Republic of Congo down. Businesses sometimes use the tactic, illegal in some countries, to muscle out competition and establish a monopoly. In a written response to VOA, CMOC said, "We firmly deny the accusations. This round of price fluctuation is within the normal range and is a true reflection of market supply and demand." The MSP says its aim is to eliminate predatory pricing and to reform the world's mining industry, where exploitation of workers and institutions in developing nations is common. Fernandez, who is also the U.S. Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, Energy and the Environment, says African minerals like cobalt are essential for the world's transition to green energy in the face of climate change.
We need Africa. We need African resources in order to do that. That's an opportunity for Africa, and Africa can demand what it's always wanted, which is technical assistance, knowledge transfer, working with communities, benefiting with communities.
Analysts say that the US, European Union, and other MSP countries are also aiming to steer control of strategic resources away from the People's Republic of China, as its rivalry with the West intensifies. Fernandez says this isn't the case.
The objective here is to diversify our supply chains. It is true that for the most part, the PRC controls many of these minerals. That's a vulnerability not only for the West, but for all of us, as we aim to do all of this while upholding high environmental, social, and governance values. And by that, I mean working with communities to make sure that communities benefit from their natural resources.
Mining experts told VOA that Chinese companies are carrying out some of the worst practices in the mining industry and that the MSP is important in offsetting that. Andre Bayer is CEO of Core Potash, a mining company operating in the Republic of Congo.
It's an important reaction to counteract those that do not have the same scruples. But what happens is you've got a lot of private Chinese investors in Africa, and who are no longer even being reined in by their government in their country, and their behavior, actually their behavior can be the most shocking.
One analyst says the MSP's task is difficult because it and Western countries do not have the same sway, control, or leverage that China has over its private companies. Christian Gerard Nima is with the China Global South Project.
So that's why, whether being the MSP, the IRA, or the Critical Raw Material Act in Europe, or any kind of initiative in Canada or in Australia, they are all depending on one thing. They're depending on the fact that private companies will be willing to follow through with the strategy.
Ultimately, Fernandez says African countries will have to decide for themselves whom to partner with. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Today's Friday, July 5th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa says he's ready to retire and hand over the presidency to a new ZANU-PF leader. Mnangagwa made the remarks in Manicaland region Thursday while officially launching a water and boba juice-making firm. He said he had no interest in extending his term. VOA Zimbabwe's Gift Dube reached ZANU-PF lawmaker Joseph Shuma, who says Mnangagwa is a law-abiding citizen and as a result, he will be leaving office gracefully.
This puts to rest any speculation whatsoever that could have been circulating from any corner that probably the president wants to undo the constitution and do what could be termed as unconstitutional. So our president has spoken, and he has actually even gone further to explain how we do things as ZANU-PF, whereby we are going to hold our Congress, as we always do, where a new leader will be elected to lead us further. So here we go. The eggs are now on some people's faces that they've always wanted to talk bad about our colossal party. ZANU-PF is a party that adheres to its constitution and the constitution of the country.
Mr. Chuma, we know that there are some people who want Mr. Mnangagwa to extend his term of office. What is going to happen to this group of people? Are they not going to influence him to change his mind on what he's talking about?
Well, if some people will appreciate and probably envy his works and ask him to stay on It will be a bit difficult in our circumstances because of the dictates of our constitution, which clearly says that if ever there will be any changes and amendment to the close of two terms, that kind of change will not benefit the incumbent, who in this case is our president. It will be difficult to actually have that. But look, he has done very well. His first term was superb. His second term is proving amazing. He's pushing a lot of projects, and the economy definitely is stabilizing and is set to even grow bigger and bigger and faster as well, because he has addressed most of the fundamentals of making the economy tick. And that's, you know, the road infrastructure that we see being built all over the country. We see a lot of dams that have been built to actually secure water availability. And we saw the expansion in Wange of Unit 6 and 7. So there's a lot that this man has done in his presidency. So it would not be amazing to find people clamoring for him to stay on. But you see, we've got a constitutional issue here that might then become a sort of a hindrance in that kind of move.
That was Joseph Shumai, ZANU-PF legislator, speaking with Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo, with VOA Zimbabwe's Kip Stube. July 20th marks the 55th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. An interactive exhibit at Manhattan's Intrepid Museum reminds the viewers of the enormity of the undertaking and what went into the first moon landing. Evgeny Maslov has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Seeing the different parts of a spaceship, examining an astronaut's spacesuit, and even touching a tiny piece of the moon, all that is possible for visitors at the Intrepid Museum's interactive exhibit called Apollo, When We Went to the Moon, located in New York. The exhibit is housed in a large pavilion on the deck of the aircraft carrier Intrepid, a National Historic Landmark docked in New York's waterfront. The exhibition's curator, Kate Good, says it's the first such large collection of all things moon and Apollo missions in New York City.
There's a spacesuit that's further over behind us. That's an American spacesuit that is the first that ever had life support. This is a helmet that's been broken down into its pieces.
There are plaster casts of American astronauts' hands that were needed to make their space gloves. As part of the Apollo program, U.S. astronauts landed on the moon six times between 1969 and 1972. But the first mission remains the best known one, as well as the names of its three astronauts, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
In a world where cars can now drive themselves, it's a bit of a shock to see the things that the astronauts had to do with no help from computers.
So this is a control stick. This is the effectively joystick, as what kids would know.
Basically.
Yeah, basically, to be able to use the thrusters to adjust where they were going once they were out of the atmosphere. The book is the checklist for what they needed to do to leave.
The exhibit also pays homage to the space race between the U.S. and what was then the Soviet Union.
That was the space race. Who could really make the better capsule? Who could make the better rocket?
The spacesuit of a Soviet astronaut and a real Soyuz capsule are also on display. Rulers and compasses that belonged to the Saturn rocket airspace engineer Wernher von Braun, recording of speeches by Khrushchev and Kennedy, and archival footage of the first flight to the moon. All these artifacts submerge visitors into the atmosphere of the turbulent and revolutionary 1960s. The exhibition will be open to the public until September 2nd. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And in U.S. politics, U.S. President Joe Biden admitted in a radio interview that he, quote, screwed up, unquote, his presidential debate against Republican candidate, former President Donald Trump. In a radio interview with WRG that aired on Thursday morning, Biden spoke about his record delivering for black Americans as president. asked whether there was any reason for the American people to be concerned after his halting performance in last week's debate with Trump, Biden said he had a bad debate, adding that this should not erase what he's done as president for 3.5 years. Biden's already shaky standing in opinion polls against Trump took a slight hit after the debate in Atlanta, but a new Reuters Ipsos poll showed Biden pulled even with Trump this week, a sign that the contest remains close. And it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Chinedu. We begin the sport with the draws for the CAF Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2025 qualifiers, which was held in Johannesburg on Thursday. 48 countries will be aiming to qualify for the 35th edition of the Biennial Africa Showpiece. Cote d'Ivoire are defending champions and were placed in Group G, where they will play former champions Zambia, Sierra Leone and Chad. Host Morocco were placed in Group B. The Atlas Lions will take on Gabon, Central African Republic and Lesotho. The qualifiers will start in September 2024 and end in November 2024. Rwanda national women's sitting volleyball team has commenced their training camp as they embark on preparations for the highly anticipated Paralympic Games, which will take place in Paris, France from August 28th to September the 8th. Head coach Moussad Elouati Rashad has summoned 14 players for the training camp. Rwanda is placed in Group B alongside Brazil, Slovenia and Canada. The team's opening match will be against Brazil on August 29th. This will mark Rwanda's third appearance in the Paralympic Games, having previously competed in Rio in 2016 and Tokyo in 2020. And now to Ghana, where Ghanaian swimmer Josely Mensah is determined to do her very best after earning qualification for the upcoming Olympic Games in Paris via the wildcard entry. She is one of two swimmers who will feature at the Global Showpiece after being ranked as the highest female athlete in Ghana by the World Aquatics. Her time of 26.52 seconds, which was attained at the African Games in the women's 50 meters freestyle event, was enough to secure her the ticket to the Paris Olympics.
And I was very excited. Of course, I had been hoping to be selected, but there's also a lot of competition amongst athletes, and you never truly know if you make it until you get that call or you get that message. So I was very happy. I was grateful and obviously very excited. I mean, obviously the Olympics, it's the top end for every athlete. Everyone wishes to be at the Olympic Games at some point.
Staying with the Paris Olympics, Namibia will be represented by only 4 athletes at the 2024 Games. With only 4 athletes set to participate in the Global Showpiece, Namibia's representation is 7 athletes fewer than the contingent at the 2020 edition in Tokyo, Japan. John Smith, Secretary General of the Namibia National Olympic Committee, says the country will be represented across 3 sports: marathon, cycling, and swimming.
Qualification was extremely hard, but we are glad to have 4 athletes that fully qualified and that will be able to represent the country on, you know, that level.
And that of Daybreak Africa Sports, I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Chinedu, in Washington.
Thank you so much, Samson, and have a great Friday. And that's it for this Friday, July 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. And for more news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
As journalists continue to report on complex and difficult topics, including conflict and human suffering, studies like the one done by the Harvard Kennedy School indicate it's increasingly exposing them to trauma and affecting their mental health. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will explore how mental health is discussed in the media and why female journalists are at a higher risk. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 9.